Thank you for tuning in to the Israel Podcast, Episode 2, The Righteous Plinoth. In the last episode, I covered a full account of an unnamed Jewish soldier, published in 1916 by the historian Simon Dubnov. My initial encounter with the account was on a random internet tangent. I ended up reading it repeatedly before I decided to translate it into English and start this podcast. If you haven't listened to that episode, I implore you to do so now. That anonymous soldier mentioned in his lengthy account several battles, pogroms, and other important events in Jewish and world history. Some of these events I was familiar with, others not so much. One of the major events he mentioned took place in the Passover of 1891, the brutal Moscow exile, which perhaps I will dedicate a separate episode to. A second event, a pogrom, mentioned when the soldier makes his way to his hometown, Kishinev, definitely warrants a separate episode. The soldier in the account was also wounded in two of the largest battles of the 20th century and two of the largest military defeats of the Russian army in modern history. The first was the Battle of Mukden against Japan in what is now northern China. And the second was the Battle of Tannenberg, near present-day Kaliningrad. The Battle of Mukden, which took place in February and March of 1905, was one of the largest fought before World War I, with more than 500,000 men engaged in combat. After a Russian defeat at Liaoyang and a decisive Japanese victory at the Battle of Port Arthur, a 260,000-strong Russian army regrouped at Mukden, facing the Japanese, which were redeploying their entire army, which was of a similar size. The Russian defensive line was 90 miles or 145 kilometers long, with troops dug into trenches behind barbed wire. The Japanese attempted to envelop the Russians, attacking both flanks. To escape envelopment, the Russian army was forced into a disorderly retreat, leaving behind the wounded and supplies, and marking Mukden as the last land battle of the war. Losses in this battle were exceptionally heavy, with approximately a third of the Russian force completely wiped out. Popular discontent in Russia that was already high, and the news of the defeat of Mukden brought the country to the brink of revolution. The second battle, he mentions, the Battle of Tannenberg, was an even larger calamity. That battle was fought between Russia and Germany in late August 1914, during the first month of the First World War. The battle resulted in the almost complete destruction of the Russian Second Army, and then with a series of follow-up battles, the destruction of most of the First Army as well. In these series of battles, almost 150,000 Russians died and 135,000 were taken prisoner. The Germans, on the other hand, lost only around 25,000 men. But what really caught my attention, however, was the following paragraph from the account, and I quote, "Back in the spring of 1905, I foresaw the black clouds that were about to cover the land. More than once did I clash with the bloodthirsty army of the Black Hundreds. I took part in the self-defense in Zhytomyr and saw the body of the student Plinoth, a member of our self-defense heroes. The body of the only Russian that fought with us lay at my feet. I stood with the 10 fallen in Troyanov, the 10 dismembered bodies of the martyred youths that set off to help their brothers in Zhytomyr and were murdered en route by a gang of peasants who fell upon them in a predatory frenzy." The Black Hundreds were a reactionary, monarchist, and ultra-nationalist movement in Russia in the early 20th century. They were staunch supporters of the Tsar and opposed any movement away from the reigning autocracy. In addition to being devout monarchists, they were also infamous for their extremism, nationalism, xenophobia, anti-Semitism, and incitement to violent pogroms. While most other events and individuals were relatively easy to track down, I could not find anything about this individual, the student Blinov. The fact that the student Blinov is mentioned, as if everyone reading the account should obviously know who he is, left me curious to say the least. All I could initially find out is that after what was supposed to be a small victorious war with Japan that turned into a major defeat, the Russian Empire descended into chaos and the Revolution of 1905. The uprisings were also accompanied by a wave of anti-Jewish pogroms that swept through the empire. In Zhytomyr, late in April 1905, Jewish resistance to a pogrom quickly turned into a full-fledged battle in which, according to some legends of the time, more non-Jewish rioters than Jews lost their lives. But I could not easily find out about the student Blinov or what his role in all this was. After many days of searching, I finally managed to find a short Hebrew article by Joseph Tabenchik in a periodical published by the World Union of Volhynian Jews in January of 1978. The article was titled The Righteous Blinov, and here is my translation. In my childhood, and later, I heard, of course, of the Russian student Blinov from Zhytomyr, who gave his life in the defense of Jews during the pogroms of 1905, in the days of the first Russian Revolution. The name Blinov is etched in the memories of the Jews of Zhytomyr as an esteemed figure, a fighter for justice, one with the highest of morals. Legends about him spread by word of mouth. He fought the rioters alongside his Jewish comrades in the Zhytomyr self-defense. The defense was well organized and ready to repel any enemy attacks. During those pogroms, 17 members of the self-defense fell, along with Blinov, and approximately 100 were injured. During all the face-to-face clashes with the hooligans, the members of the self-defense had the upper hand. However, the army that was supposedly sent to protect the Jews always assisted the pillagers. The pogroms of 1905 lasted 3 days, and the rioters had the upper hand with the help of the army. Thousands participated in the funeral of the student Blinov, Jews and Christians alike. A delegation from the Jewish community stood before the Blinov family and suggested he be buried at the Jewish cemetery with his brothers at arms. The family declined the offer. Quote, as a Christian, he should be buried at the Christian cemetery. Unquote. In the darkness of the pogroms throughout Russia, and Zhytomyr in particular, Blinov was a bright star. In my youth, I lived in the neighborhood housing the Pravoslavic cemetery. It was well maintained with many trees and flowers, and I would often walk there and read a book on one of the benches. This was well after the 1917 revolution. Until then, no Jews set foot in there. I searched several times for the gravestone of Blinov, but in vain. I did find a gravestone with the name Blinov, but it belonged to an officer of the Tsar's police. The Jews of Russia became aware of Blinov through the Jewish magazines of the time. The world learned of Blinov and his death by the murderous bandits while protecting the Jews of Zhytomyr from the history of the Jewish people by Dubnov. In 1909, an interview was published with a Russian woman named Sarah Lavitskaya. From the interview, one learns of a woman with an interesting and unique past, a woman that devoted her life to the war against the tyranny of the Tsar and aiding the Jewish people that were being humiliated and persecuted. She was the daughter of a rich landlord from southern Russia and left her father's house after graduation from high school. In her youth, she turned to Rabbi Meze in Moscow, wishing to convert to Judaism, not for religious reasons, but for solidarity with the wrongfully persecuted Jewish people. Rabbi Maze explained to her that it would not be beneficial, as they would both probably be sent to prison with many years of hard labor. Lavitskaya learned Yiddish to familiarize herself with Jewish literature. Through these readings, she learned of Blinov and his murder by the rioters. She then decided to travel to Zhytomyr, visit his grave, and ask for his forgiveness for not joining him in the defense of the Jews. This was well after the Second World War and the Holocaust. Upon arriving in Zhytomyr, she went straight to the old Jewish cemetery, believing it was buried there alongside his Jewish comrades. She was then sent to the Pravoslavic cemetery and met an old undertaker that attended Blinov's burial. He walked her over and showed her the grave, but it was without a gravestone. She decided to search for the gravestone, hoping to find it. She too came across the gravestone of the police officer, who had an identical name. She returned to the location the undertaker took her to and suddenly noticed a marble piece of stone in the bushes. She picked up the stone and saw the name Blinov in faded letters. She also saw his given and father's name, which Dubnov does not mention, Ivan Nikolaevich. Also were engraved the same words that were engraved on the tombstones of the Jewish fallen: fell by the hands of murderous bandits. She visited Zhytomyr twice more to find Blinov's relatives. She managed to do so and learned that Blinov had a baby daughter living in Leningrad. Lavitskaya traveled there, found his daughter, and received a picture of him from her. In Zhytomyr, she went to the Great Synagogue, where they put up a plaque commemorating the dead of 1905, Blinov among them. She met a Jewish printer who was a member of the self-defense, but did not know Blinov personally. He only heard about him, for he was in a different division, in a different region, and was not present when Blinov fell. He told her that a few days before his death, Blinov returned from Switzerland, to which he fled to avoid arrest. He returned to Russia illegally to join the self-defense. Now, armed with a full name, I went back to my search and found an individual with a remarkably similar name. Not an Ivan Nikolaevich Blinov, but a Nikolai Ivanovich Blinov. Well, actually, Mykola Nikolaevich Blinov, which is the Ukrainian pronunciation of his name. Contemporary accounts of the events that occurred in Zhytomyr during the spring of 1905 seem to leave one with the impression of two different confrontations. One, which could be described as a confrontation between two equally aggressive parties, and the other, more like an old-fashioned 19th century pogrom. Zhytomyr is situated to the west of Kiev, and by the early 20th century was home to a thriving Jewish community with two synagogues, 50 prayer houses, a public library, a Jewish bank, and home to the first Hebrew printing press, which until 1862 was one of only two Hebrew presses allowed to operate in Russia. At the time of the pogrom, around 40,000 Jews lived in Zhytomyr, making up between a third or even up to half of the population. The Christian population was divided almost equally between Catholics and Orthodox, and between Russians, Ukrainians, and Poles. In 1905, with the Russian monarchy on the brink of collapse, the Tsar turned to the time-tested tactics of anti-Semitism, blaming the Jews for all problems in society and sending violent gangs to start pogroms against Jewish villages and communities throughout the empire. The nature of pogroms in this and earlier periods taught Jews that they occurred with the compliance of the government authorities and at times even at their instigation. The government, the police, the military, therefore, could be no guarantee of protection. Segment of the Jewish community gradually became aware of the necessity for Jews to come to their own defense and to concern themselves with the safety of their brethren and the protection of their property. they should not depend for their security on the forces of law and order of a hostile government, and on occasion, they must even oppose them directly. This point of view gained strength in the wake of the revolutionary movement throughout Russia, and large groups of the local Jewish community supported the foundation of self-defense units in Zhytomyr. The members of these self-defense units were usually very young. Police reports about the pogroms and demonstrations of 1905 state that these groups were consisted mostly of university and secondary school students, most of them minors. Organizing these illegal battle squads, obtaining firearms, and establishing commando structures was impossible without the resources of local political networks. In Zhytomyr, the main players were the Zionist and socialist youth movements. However, it was also the self-defense itself that added one more disquieting ingredient to the already delicate situation in the city. The self-defense units began to convene secret meetings for the purpose of military practice and training, which usually took place in the forests outside the city, but did not go unnoticed by local peasants. On the 13th of April, 1905, self-defense meeting close to a neighboring village dispersed into small groups, and one of these groups was later attacked by local peasants, leaving one Jew seriously wounded. In the villages, rumors were spreading about hundreds of Jews who are arming themselves and practicing shooting at a portrait of the Tsar. In the following days, the rumors about the shooting of the Tsar's portrait spread like wildfire in Zhytomyr and its surroundings. And so did the idea that Jews might seek vengeance for their wounded comrade. Peasants began to guard their houses at night, fearing Jewish attacks or arson. The very emergence of the self-defense was interpreted as a threat. The local peasants believed that the Jews intend to retaliate against the Christians for the pogroms of Kishinev and Gomel. As Easter approached, rumors were spreading that the Jews are planning to blow up the Orthodox or Catholic cathedral, depending, of course, on the version of the rumor, and to massacre the Christians. Letters sent by the attorney of the Zhytomyr Regional Court to the minister complained of Jews jamming the sidewalks, unwilling to give way to passers-by, and stating, and I quote, "The Jew is revolting. The Jews must be curbed." Large segments of the Christian and Jewish populations were now expecting a major confrontation or outbreak of violence. That confrontation began on St. George's Day, when a group of Jews out on a boating trip were stoned by a group of peasants having a picnic on the bank. This resulted in a standoff the following day on Cathedral Square between a group of some 70, quote-unquote, tidily dressed Christian workers that occupied the one side and a number of Jews on the other. Within the Christian crowd, the mob managed to beat to death one Jew before the military encircled some 50 members of the mob, while two other pogromists managed to stab another Jew, an accidental bystander. The Jewish group on Cathedral Square eventually broke off when they realized that the real pogrom was not going to take place in the city center, but in Podol. Podol was the poor Jewish district of Zhytomyr. A bridge connected the city center to Podol and to the even poorer Christian outskirt of Malevanka, notorious for their unruly and criminal behavior. Jews had been guarding the bridge in anticipation of trouble until the evening, when dozens of the hooligans bypassed the bridge, crossed the river at a nearby ford, and attacked from the Podolian rear. Taken by surprise, the Jews at the bridge panicked, and within a few minutes, at least six people were killed and 30 wounded. The pogromists began to sack shops and houses and to smash and destroy whatever valuables could not be carried away. The violence resumed the next day, as Black Hundred squads arrived in the city, taking advantage of police and military inaction, and according to some accounts, explicit support. The violent pogrom lasted 3 days, until the 26th of April, when the governor finally called in the military and the pogrom came to an end. Although the Jewish self-defense units put up a fight in certain parts of the city, some were armed with revolvers. Of the 18 persons killed during the pogrom, 16 were Jews. 9 Christians and 82 Jews were wounded so gravely that they required hospital treatment. 10 young Jews who started from a neighboring town to assist the Jews of Zhytomyr were intercepted and butchered to death in the village of Troyanov near the city. It is unclear in what part of the pogrom Blinov found his death. Perhaps it was in the initial confrontation at Cathedral Square. His death is described in another account. Nikolai Ivanovich Blinov was a Ukrainian student and activist who protested the brutality of the Tsar's dictatorial regime. He was forced into exile in Switzerland, where he became an amateur actor and appeared in political theater condemning anti-Semitism and the Tsar. He often played on stage the role of Boris in a play by Evgeny Chirikov. He played the son of a Jewish watchmaker who, having been expelled from university, befriends young revolutionaries with whom they discuss Zionism and the Jewish question. The play ended with a pogrom. In 1905, Nikolai traveled to Zhytomyr's hometown in Ukraine to visit his parents, and when the violence escalated, he refused to stand idly by. Along with a Jewish friend, Dr. Binstock, Nikolai bravely approached a violent mob, unarmed. He called out to them, "Brothers, my people, the Jews are not your enemies. You are being incited against them to make you forget your real enemies, your oppressors." The enraged mob descended upon Nikolai and beat him to death, screaming, "Leftist traitors, socialists, you're worse than Jews." Nikolai was 24 years old. His friend, the doctor, was severely beaten, but managed to survive. Badly injured, but alive. The self-defense in Zhytomyr ultimately did not succeed in fending off the pogromists, especially in the places where the military and police intervened on the pogromist's behalf. However, the heroism of the self-defense units in Zhytomyr stood in stark contrast to the helplessness of other Jewish communities facing pogroms at the same time. This was evident from the distribution of a pamphlet following the events, declaring, and I quote, "Another pogrom, but not another Kishinev. They did not die like mice in basements, not like slaughtered chickens. No, in the streets, with weapons in hand, fell the heroes of Zhytomyr. They did not give up their lives cheaply. The righteous Ivan Nikolaevich Blinov, who gave his life fighting for the defense of the Jews of Zhytomyr." Thanks for listening and checking out the Israel podcast. I hope you tune in next time for another episode.